Good afternoon. Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host, Tom Wheeler, Program Director with EPIC, the Environmental Protection Information Center. The Eco News Report is brought to you by the North Coast Environmental Center, publisher of our regional environmental newspaper, Eco News. Joining me in the studio today to talk about English ivy, an invasive and noxious weed, are three folks who spend a lot of time thinking about and yanking out ivy from the ground. We have Stasia Samuels, plant ecologist at Redwood National and State Parks, Kim Taze and Stan Binney, who are two of the organizers and volunteers with the Humboldt No Ivy League. Thank you all for being here today, and welcome to the Eco News Report. So, Stasia, I'm going to start with you and your work at the National and State Parks. So, could you just tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got started there, what a plant ecologist is, and your position at the park system?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me here. I've been working at Redwood National Park since 1992. I started on doing rare plant surveys. I moved into fire ecology for about 7 or 8 years, and then I left for a year and came back into my current position as plant ecologist. So I oversee the invasive plant control program, rare plant monitoring, long-term vegetation monitoring, and some restoration projects. The invasive plant control program focuses primarily on a few different aspects. We have some long-term established populations, such as English ivy, that we work on. We also have some early detection work that we do for things that are just coming in that we want to get before they become too extensive and established.
So today's theme is English ivy, but I don't want to ignore kind of some of the other problem plants. So what are the most troublesome plants at the National and State Park, and what is the park doing about them?
The biggest chunk of our work is English ivy, Scotch broom, Himalayan blackberry is another big invasive around here that people will know about. Fennel is another one. That one is still marching through, and we're trying to protect habitats from it becoming established. Have pampas grass or jubata grass, kind of the general suite that people see around here, cotoneaster, those are the little red berries. And then we have some other less identifiable species to the general public that also do a lot of damage that we're controlling, like shining geranium is coming in from the north. And that's a small ground cover type species that people probably don't notice and don't know is non-native, but it can come in and really crowd out the natives and create a monoculture. And another one like that is stinky bob. It's a geranium robertianum.
Well, so you touched on this a little bit, and we care about these invasive species, not necessarily just because they're invasive, but that they kind of wreak ecological havoc on our North Coast plant communities. So could you talk a little bit about what invasive species do to the park, how they influence the diversity of natural and native plants? In particular, I'm curious about how ivy affects our most iconic feature of the North Coast, are redwood trees.
So a lot of the invasives that we're dealing with, we have prioritized because they create a monoculture. They come in and they take over and they really crowd out native plants. English ivy is an excellent example of that. It comes in. You never see anything else growing within an English ivy patch. Pretty much once it gets established, it's there to stay. That can have trickle-down effects. Not only does it impact native plants that could be there, but then that goes up the food chain. It impacts wildlife, both the species that are dependent on those native plants and then the higher-level species that are dependent on those lower-level species. So, for instance, the spotted owl is dependent upon rodents that live on the forest floor to some extent. And when you have ivy crowding that out, they can't see them. They can't get to them. Maybe those rodents are still there. Maybe they're not, depending on how intense the ivy is and what their habitat needs are. But you get this trickle-up effect.
Do we have ivy in some of our old growth patches, or is it primarily limited to the cutover second growth area?
So ivy spreads by seed. Birds will fly in. When the ivy is on the ground, it doesn't tend to flower. Once it grows up the trees, it will tend to flower, reaching for the sun, and then it will fruit and create berries that birds will come in and distribute. So most of the ivy that we're dealing with was planted around old residences, and that tends to not necessarily be directly adjacent to old growth, although there are some areas up north where we have that situation. But then the ivy spreads out into new areas, and the old growth is completely vulnerable. English ivy is a shade-tolerant species, so many of our invasive plants we can somewhat manage by creating shade, like Scotch broom. But with English ivy, it appreciates the shade, so it really can run rampant through the old-growth redwood system.
So I know that you're doing some work on removal. Tell me what's going on, and are there any opportunities for listeners to get involved in removal efforts?
Yeah, we've been removing ivy since the late 1990s. We had a large funded project from 2001 to 2003 in Del Norte County, focusing on parts of Redwood National Park and also Jedediah Smith State Park. We controlled about 100 acres of ivy, and we prioritized old growth stands in that effort. We're still doing follow-up. We finished that project 13 years ago. We're still going back annually and re-pulling sprouts from those areas. Those were all hand-pulled. There are other areas in the park that we're working on ivy. Primarily, we hand-pull. We also will girdle the ivy from around trees, where you'll cut a one-foot section out of the vines, and that will kill, usually it will kill the vines above that cut. Sometimes the vines will survive that, and I guess they're just getting water from the moss on the bark and whatever's coming in the bark. So it's a really resilient species, and it's very difficult to control that way. 10, 15 years later, we're still pulling resprouts. So we have an active volunteer program. If people are interested in helping out, they can contact me directly, and we can set them up with some volunteer time to help us with the ivy work.
In part of your active management, is there any use of pesticides or herbicides on ivy? And are herbicides or pesticides effective on ivy?
So we have not yet used chemicals to control ivy, but we're looking at conducting some trials this coming year where we'll test several different methods. English ivy has a waxy cuticle on the leaves, so herbicides don't tend to penetrate the leaves very well. So we're going to try the cut stump technique where you cut the vines and then you can directly dab the herbicide right on there. So that reduces the amount of chemical you're putting out. It reduces any opportunity for drift. Oftentimes English ivy is growing in riparian habitats. So we work with NOAA Fisheries on fish protections and ensuring that any kind of pesticide work that we do is approved by them. So we're going to try some different techniques. We use aquatically approved herbicides as well to ensure that we're not impacting fish in that way. But we're going to try a few different techniques, a few different concentrations, and see if we can have any success.
And so I think that this might kind of point to one of the larger systemic issues with ivy and ivy removal is the cost for removal.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about the issue of cost and how that works as a barrier to really getting these invasive species out of our kind of most precious places on the North Coast?
Right. That's a huge issue. Pulling ivy by hand is incredibly time intensive, and you have to grub the roots out. When we did the project in 2001, that grant was for about $220,000. We matched that. So that was a $500,000 project, essentially. And that was 100 acres. And that provided for 3 years of control, initial control, and then 2 years of follow-up on that. We used California Conservation Crews, the CCCs, which are excellent ivy folks. They really know what they're doing with ivy. And we used inmates through CAL FIRE now. Other than that, it's just very expensive. You can't get very far with just a couple people, so you really have to prioritize where you're working. People want to work in their own special private places that they want to protect. The real story is follow-up, follow-up, follow-up. And we do have strategies where, like containment, where we can't actually get it out of the ground, but we'll pull the outlier populations. We'll try to just keep it contained to where it is so at least it's not continuing to spread. Or we'll cut those vines so that it doesn't produce berries anymore.
So you said $500,000 for 100 acres.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have an estimate of the total number of acres that are infested with ivy?
We have about 300 acres mapped in the park right now.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those locations are less easy to access. There could be more. We don't get out into the deep old growth, for instance. We don't get out into the deep second growth all that much. We do with our forest restoration program. So people keep their eyes open for us. But I would say 300 acres is a conservative estimate.
Well, Stasia, thank you so much for being on the Eco News Report. I'm going to do a little bit of a transition. So this is our mid-show break. I'm your host, Tom Wheeler. I've been speaking with Stasia Samuels, the plant ecologist at Redwood National and State Parks, about her work getting ivy out of our national and state park. Next up, I want to welcome Kim Tays and Stan Binney, volunteers and coordinators with the Humboldt No Ivy League. All right. Well, thank you, Kim and Stan, for being here today. First off, what is the No Ivy League and how did you all get started?
Well, thank you, Tom, for having us. We're really excited to discuss this very important issue that's impacting our native plants. So we really appreciate you doing a show on this. Well, basically, the No Ivy League, Humboldt No Ivy League, came together out of concern for what was happening at Trinidad State Beach and Patrick's Point State Parks. Our good friend Ginny Waters sort of alerted us all that a lot of that green vegetation we thought was so beautiful is really not native and is doing damage. So she kind of alerted us, warned us to that, and we basically came together as a group to do work in the parks, pulling ivy. We are all official state parks volunteers. And so that was our initial reason for coming together, was out of common concern for what was happening to our state parks. We saw that ivy was basically turning a biologically rich forest area into a monoculture of ivy, as Stasia had mentioned earlier. And other than annual Earth Day events at state parks, we're worried that there were no real steady, coordinated efforts to stem the spread of ivy. So basically now we are working not only as a work group on Friday mornings. There's five of us that get together on Friday mornings to pull ivy at both of the parks. But we are also trying to work, as you know, with EPIC on possibly getting ivy declared a noxious weed by the California Department of Food and Agriculture. So we're moving into an advocacy role also, is how we see it.
And I'll take that opportunity to just talk a little bit about this petition. And I wanted to thank you both for your efforts, because it was you two and the rest of the No Ivy League that got EPIC interested in ivy. Y'all came and gave a great presentation to us about the problem. And I think Stan came with a bag full of ivy, including what looked kind of like old growth. I don't think I've ever seen ivy so thick. And it was a shocker. And it was also really nice to know that there was somebody doing something about this problem. From my perspective, it's hard to get money. It's hard to kind of influence that level of government to get people in Sacramento to care enough to give $500,000 for an ivy removal project. But what we can do is we can influence regulations, and there is a nice, easy role. And perhaps that's just kind of my thinking as an attorney. But it was shocking to me to learn that ivy is still legal to purchase in California. I come from Washington State, where ivy has been illegal to purchase for a number of years. It's illegal to purchase in Oregon, again, because of the work of a No Ivy League group and their advocacy. And so it was shocking to me. And I knew that there must be something we could do about this. And so we looked into California law and realized that California maintains a list of noxious plants, kind of depending on what level of a noxious plant they are, how bad the infestation is. There are different levels of control. At the most basic is a prohibition on its sale. And so we have a petition that we got a lot of help from the No Ivy League to the California Department of Food and Agriculture to list English ivy as a noxious weed. In doing so, it will prohibit its sale in California. So no longer can you go to a nursery and contribute further to the problem. And, you know, that might just kind of be a baby step, but it feels good to make any sort of a baby step. And so I'm really happy and I'm proud, and I want to give a big shout out and thank you to you both and to Stasia for being so enthusiastic about ivy removal and ivy control. You all have been an inspiration to EPIC. So that's where we're going. And I want to say that the petition will be out later this month. And we're still waiting to hear back from a couple more commitments on the petition. But we have a really great and diverse group of sign-ons to our petition. So, of course, we have the No Ivy League, but we also have Redwood National and State Parks. We have the Arcata Office of the Bureau of Land Management. We have Humboldt Redwood Company, Green Diamond Resource Company, Save the Redwoods League. You know, with all those folks combined, I think that that's most of the ownership of redwood trees, at least here in Humboldt County and Del Norte County. So I'm absolutely thrilled. And we also have a bunch of other great sign-ons as well. The restoration groups, private businesses, nurseries even, that have all stepped up and recognized that the sale of ivy is something that should have been prohibited a long time ago. So I want to kind of move to some of the nitty-gritty details about pulling up ivy, because I think you two have probably pulled more than most. How do you pull up ivy and how do you get rid of it? We heard from Stasia that it takes multiple trips back and attentiveness.
Well, this is Stan Binney. I'll address that issue. I don't know how many tons of ivy we've pulled out of Trinidad Beach and Patrick's Point, but it's several. Initially, we like to try to get it out of the trees first because, as Stasia mentioned, that's where it fruits and the seeds that are inside these little berries are distributed far and wide by the birds that come and feed on the berries and then just spread them all over the place. And they're very high level of viability of these seeds. I think it's about 70% of the seeds will sprout. And, of course, as we walk through areas that are not yet really fully infested, we find all these little seedling plants coming up all over the place. That's job security, I guess, if you look at it that way. But those, of course, could be pulled out now and would save a lot of effort further down the road. The ivy plant itself on the ground can grow, I'd say at least 10 feet a year. The stems move along the ground fairly quickly. And, of course, when they do come in contact with a trunk of a tree, then up the tree they go. And you mentioned this old-growth ivy that I brought to our meeting. I think the stem diameter of that plant was about 5 inches. So it was, I guess you considered, an old-growth ivy plant. And that vine probably went up into this large Sitka spruce tree for 150 feet or so up into the tops of the trees. So it's a difficult thing to control, but our small group has done quite a bit of good, I think, in these two parks that we've been working in. We would invite people to come and look to see what we've done. There are areas that we have cleared, and within 6 months, the native plants are coming back. We have an area that was almost solid ivy, and now the bleeding heart plant has come up in there quite extensively. So we don't feel that there's really much need to restore the native plants. Once you remove the ivy, the seed bank seems to be there, and the native plants do return fairly quickly. So, you know, that's kind of the effort we put forth. We, you know, the pulling of it is just a matter of grabbing hold of the vine and pulling it out. And obviously, sometimes they break off, and so you have to kind of keep at it and keep at it. But in some areas, it's much easier to pull out than others. It has to do with the soil type and the moisture content of the soil and that sort of thing. But it is a lot of physical effort. We have found that we can just pile this ivy up into piles that are 2 or 3 feet high, and within a relatively short period of time, particularly in the summertime, they dry up and the pile just kind of disintegrates eventually. It just becomes compost and returns to the soil. So we have felt that it's not totally necessary to remove it. Some efforts have been done to do that, to take it to the recycling centers and so forth, but our feeling is that for the most part it will just decompose and return to the soil. So that's kind of what we've done. Kim, you might want to add anything to that.
I think you covered that pretty well. And, of course, cutting it from around the trees, pulling it airily above the cut, it will typically die. And then we try to make a well around the tree to at least keep it from going back up the tree to give us time to get in and get to the ground. But, you know, it is a very doable project. I think what we as a group have always said, that what's worse than the problem is not doing anything at all. And so if people see the problem and think it's impossible, it's, you know, it really is something that you can get your hands around. If you just keep at it and are committed to it, you can do a lot of good restoration work out there.
And I want to encourage everybody listening at home that they are capable of doing this. I don't want to be ageist here, but when the No Ivy League came to Epic, it seemed like it was mostly middle-aged or older folks.
Older.
So, you know, you don't need to be a young buck, you know, strong back, weak mind to get this out. It's something that everybody can do. Are there any special tools that you like to use to work on the ivy?
Well, we have some really nice, the Atlas gloves are like a thermal glove that's a really good glove to wear to protect your hands from the thorny shrubs or vines. Also, we use clippers. Small hand clippers are really great if you're pulling so that you're not, we want people not to hurt their backs when they're pulling. So if you get resistance in the pull, to go ahead and cut with the clippers. And then we also use loppers, which are, you know, a little bit, they're a mid-sized tool, I would say, to cut the vines around the trees, because the vines are pretty oftentimes thick and hard to cut with just regular small hand clippers.
And if it's a large stem, you can also use a regular pruning saw, just like an arborist pruning saw, hand saw, to cut the larger stems that might be going up the trees. That works well, too.
But we always warn people, be careful of the trees, not to cut into the trees.
Oh, yeah. Is there anything to kind of yank it out of the ground that you use? I know for something like Scotch broom, they make really nice kind of levers that you can really exert a lot of pressure on the plant without really exerting that much effort yourself.
Yeah, those are called weed wrenches, and they do work very well for shrub-like plants like cotoneaster and Scotch broom and some of the other shrub plants. But for ivy, it takes root about every foot or so along the vine, so those kinds of pieces of equipment don't really work very well. We have considered using some hand tools, but we're concerned about salamanders. We find quite a few salamanders in these ivy patches, and we don't want to damage them. So it's essentially a matter of doing it by hand, and it's amazing how much you can get that way. It's not an easy task, but certainly it's doable. And we have also utilized the California Conservation Corps in some of our control efforts. So Kim, you might want to say a word about that.
Well, we have recently, I mentioned earlier, that we are sort of moving into not only a work group, but an advocacy group as well. And we were able to, in collaboration with state parks, get a grant from the California State Parks Foundation that allowed us to hire the California Conservation Corps last November. They worked for 4 days at Trinidad State Beach because that's the most heavily infested park. And then, as out of gratitude for the No Ivy League's efforts, were willing to actually donate a day to us, which was of great appreciation. So we've had good luck with their help, and are continuing to just advocate, hopefully get state parks to make it more of a priority. We just feel like ivy has been sort of put on the back burner for too long now, and hopefully get more support from state parks. We would also like to hopefully at some point schedule with Senator McGuire to actually have him come up and do a site visit and see the work that we've been doing, and maybe get some progressive legislation forward to help us get more funding towards natural resource work.
All right. Well, Senator, you've been called out.
Yeah.
You better come on up.
Come on up.
Do you have a preferred season for pulling? Stan, I also wanted to ask you, or Kim, you might know as well, about the root structure, how deep these roots go.
Well, the root system itself on the vines that are crawling across the ground are relatively shallow, but of course these big stems, when they are growing up in the trees, those may have a considerably deeper root system. It may go down a foot or so into the ground. But we have found that usually if you cut those off just at or below the soil surface, that the larger stems don't sprout. So that's a good thing as far as control goes. But sometimes they do, and you just have to kind of go back in and check it and cut them off below where the sprouting is taking place. I don't know if you want to get into a little bit about the history of English ivy, where it came from.
And sure, go for it.
Well, of course, as the name would imply, England is a great source, and it is native to the UK area and also to Northern Europe. We've seen it growing in Scandinavia out in the forested areas. And it was, of course, brought here. Any of the non-native plants were not here before the white man came over from Europe and brought a lot of these plants with him. They brought English ivy as an ornamental plant, used it for house plants and also for outdoor ornamental plants. And it has escaped, of course, and early, this probably happened in the mid to late 1800s when it first came over here. And early on, it wasn't that much of a problem. I wasn't around, but you didn't hear much about it until maybe about the middle of the 20th century, 1950s or so, people started noticing it more and more. And we've got some long-term, well, Jenny and Jim Waters that have been here for 50 years, they said that when they first came here, they didn't notice it very much. But as time has gone on, it's now growing at kind of an exponential rate. It's one of those old things like the more you have, the more you get. And so it just is growing much more rapidly now, spreading more rapidly because there's more of it. So it's become a real problem and something we need to deal with.
So I know a lot of people kind of like the look of English ivy, and I can admit that there is something pleasurable about having this, you know, constantly green wall of leaves. Do you have any sort of plants that you would recommend folks planting instead of English ivy?
Well, there are not too many that I know of native plants that have this vining habit that English ivy has, but there certainly are native plants that would fit the bill for a ground cover because, you know, the ivy does cover a lot of the ground area and has become a real problem there. There are native plants like wild ginger and myanthemum, wood violets, bleeding heart, these native plants that are growing here naturally, and they do, of course, will fit in for this ground cover aspect. But as far as a vining plant, I really can't think of anything. And of course, a lot of people, they look at it and think, boy, that looks real exotic. It looks like a jungle, you know, and they think it's really cool. But looks can be deceiving, I guess.
Well, we are just about out of time, but I want to make sure that folks have an opportunity to connect with the No Ivy League and with Stasia. So I have Stasia's email. So if you have any questions or are interested in getting involved with Redwood National and State Parks, you can email Stasia Samuels. So that's STASSIA_SAMUELS at nps.gov. That's her email. Also, be looking for an epic blog post with some of this contact information coming up in the future. And Kim, would you like to give your contact info?
Sure. If people are interested in helping us on Friday mornings, they can email me at kimkat, that's K-I-M-K-A-T 067 at gmail.com. And also, you can contact Michelle Forries. There are monthly ivy pulls on Saturday mornings, the second Saturday of the month from 9 to noon. Michelle's email address is michelle.forries, that's F-O-R-Y-S, at parks.ca.gov. And also, I'm asking people to possibly contact Senator McGuire if I can give his email address.
Go for it.
It's senator.mcguire, M-C-G-U-I-R-E, at senate.ca.gov. Hopefully people will write and express their concerns about this problem. Thank you.
Well, this has been the Eco News Report. My name is Tom Wheeler. I've been your host for the past half hour, and I just had a great time with my guests today, Stasia Samuels, plant ecologist at Redwood National and State Parks, and Kim Taze and Stan Binney, two of the great organizers and volunteers of the Humboldt No Ivy League. We've been talking about English ivy, one of the great scourges of California's coastal forests. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call our listener comment line at 826-6089. If you'd like to replay this episode or share it with others, and please do share it with your friends, you can go to the archive programs page at khsu.org. Previous shows are also posted on the North Coast Environmental Center's website at yournec.org. The Eco News Report is produced at Humboldt State University in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. Many thanks to Fred, as always, for engineering. Join us again next time for the Eco News Report.